sound great. I mean,
it sounds horrible. I listen to it every single time.
You don't have auto-tune with the Adobe suite yet?
No, I haven't figured out how to use auto-tune.
You play it like a piano.
Yeah.
Like you take the vote, do, 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 do. Mrs. Robinson.
So, you ready?
I'm ready.
Let's get sweaty.
Let's get sweaty. I'm in the mood to be slow and careful. My body's ready for a mountain climb. All of a sudden, it will all become lovely. The flower that opens. And what you just heard there were the sweet, sweet sounds of a man by the name of Jake Hill. A man you have come to know and love because we had him on the podcast, because you hear him every single episode and almost every time we put out an Instagram clip. And Jake Hill, drum roll please, is going to be coming to Milo this month. We've got Spose, who is another guest on the pod. Spose is coming to perform August 20th. And Oyster Guy, another guest on the pod. We keep it real yeah. tight and in the family around here.
Very like 500 AD civilization, you know?
Well, a lot of some form of nepotism.
Yeah.
But Oyster Guy, who we had on the pod, we just kind of got it in our heads that like shucking oysters all day and then like putting your knife down and then proceeding to walk to the stage and perform and open for Spose would be this kind of really funny, cool moment. And I don't know what has happened over the last couple.
Everybody stop what you're doing. Watch. He's putting the knife down.
But I wanted a dozen more. No, not yet. But Oyster Guy has been bopping around with Jake Hill. I think I mentioned it to you before, a few episodes ago, that kind of Bradley Copperkettle and Jake, all these Portland musicians that we have a proximity to, are kind of all hanging out together, making music in Portland. And Oyster Guy got Jake Hill wound up about coming to Milo, serving breakfast sandwiches, maybe even some pizza, singing songs, opening with them, doing songs together. And I'm getting really excited to have the full Jake Hill experience for the Spose show.
And so, as we all know, Maine is the Montana of the East.
It is. This man is, he keeps it consistent.
Yeah.
He does the Montana of the West and the Montana of the East. But truly been fun. I've said it before. It's been really fun to watch what he's got going on right now. It's like his wave is swelling right now. You know what I mean? That's what it feels like when I look at Jake Hill, and I can't wait to have one day in August where I get to hop on that surfboard and ride that wave with him. That'll be a ton of fun. So good on you, Jake.
Good on you, buddy.
Good on you, brother. I'd love to see it. What about for you, my man? What's been new with you?
Just kind of cranking through summer. Oh, I got a little story for you.
Ooh, baby.
So I told you a little bit about this, but about this time last week, I kind of told you excitedly, you know what, dude, like I'm trying to take life back by the horns. And my buddy Forrest, who we've talked about plenty of times on here, mm-hmm. One of my best friends, has done work, a lot of work for us. We were texting and he was talking about he was going to go to this moped rally in Connecticut. What the luck. first and foremost, what is that? I don't live that mope life. I don't live that two-stroke life.
But a lot of people down in Portland at the brewery do.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, not a lot is maybe a big term, but yes. And if you live in a city,
mm-hmm.
pretty great mode of transportation. But anyway, I find like watching it for people, it's much more about the perpetual tinkering that this old piece of shit requires. That is actually is the appeal.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
like almost this ongoing, there's always something to do
yeah.
on the thing.
Interesting.
And riding is like the reward, but it's always pretty short lived because something blows.
Time to tinker again.
Yeah. So he mentioned he was going on that. Then we were and he was like, dude, you should come. And I had that moment of like, my immediate reaction is like, no, I got things to do. And then thought about it and was like, no, I say like no to this shit all the time. And I don't have anything. I don't have plans at it. My plans were to make some chess pieces, enjoy a leisurely Saturday at my house, which
put
is
that lathe to work.
Which is important, but you know, you can do that other times. And so I was like, you know what, dude, fuck it. I will go with you. And was excited. It was like, cool, what weird experience. Like, I wasn't really thinking too much about like riding mopeds. I was just like, cool, I'll be able to hang out with my good buddy that I don't get to see as much as I'd like to.
Hell yeah.
And this is an odd context to do that, but fuck it. We'll have something to talk about on this. So we get down there, kind of stressful right from the get.
Why?
Well, I think we're a tiny bit behind, and his Forrest, really good friend from high school, lives, so it's in New Haven, Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
And his buddy Robert, amazing dude, has like a moped for me to ride. Again, never been on one in my life. Haven't thought too much about the term rally. We'll get to that. But we leave from his house, and he said it'd take about 30 minutes to get to like where the thing is.
Yeah.
So, you know, for a few blocks, it's kind of bumpy, just figuring like it out. Like, it's this weird pedal start thing.
Oh,
and then,
bumpy, not like the literal terrain. Bumpy in terms of like figuring out how to ride a moped.
Yep. So, you know, getting the, and we're on like pseudo highways, like on the side of, so it's like, I'm feeling okay with this. Like, this is a little like invigorating, a little thrilling, definitely a little dangerous, but not crazy so, especially with the three other people I'm with. There's kind of a buffer, you know? So we get there doing turns good, like feeling good. Forrest even stops me at a light. He's like, dude, don't worry. You're doing the turns right. Like you'll be good. So we roll into this bike shop it's bicycles and then motor and electric mopeds is what their thing is. And there is this weird Gamora cast of characters at this place. And there's this sort of like kind of ironic, but kind of not like biker gang vibe.
Not moped gang
crime,
vibe.
But like, you know, like jean jackets with like a bunch of patches and stuff like that. Everyone's fucking going over to, oh, how do you get that seat on there? Like everyone's just salivating.
Tinker talk. Big tinker talk.
And I have none of it.
Yeah.
And I don't care. I came to watch it, you know?
Yeah.
But then there's like a lot of people here. There's probably 60 people.
Uh-huh.
You know, soaking it in. And then it gets to the point where, you know, we're going. So 60 of these things start at once. And that immediately kind of makes me feel like, okay, this is quite a bit.
Ooh.
But, you know, figuring it out, but mind you, like, there's not a, so this rally is this fucking 70 mile charted thing, unsanctioned. Like, it's not like any, it doesn't have to be. There's not even insurance from, you don't have to register, you don't have to do shit. It's like a bicycle.
Freedom.
And
moped freedom.
Yeah, but you know, it's this weird gray area where like they're just as annoying as a cyclist for sure. So 60 motorized cyclists, like what the fuck driving. So, and it's like a lot of these people are like me, brand new to this, or at least are looking like me where, you know, you, it's kind of scary to like, you feel like you could get clipped at any time.
Because just tight.
This mob and you're dodging cars. Like, so I'm immediately like, this is not what I came for.
I thought it was more of a conference. Yes. I thought it was less of a rally and more of a conference.
So I'm like, okay. Trying to kind of figure out like what my end game is.
Yeah.
And the moped is not a nice one. It's not good. And as I noticed as we were leaving, like, the handlebar, like the grip on the, is your throttle.
You literally
just pull back the right handle, and that is your gas.
Yeah.
So I noticed as we were like at the starting line, this thing had started to move. Like it was only about a half inch away from where the other one was, like tight Todd on the thing. So I didn't give it much thought. But then as we got going, all the people I know are long gone. As I told them to, like, don't wait for me. Like, yeah. I'll figure this out. And I didn't know how much I'd have to figure it out. But so then when one term.
You're still like in the pack, but not in the pack with your friends.
Intentionally very far in the back.
The back of the pack.
Because I didn't like the fucking crowd of people.
Yeah.
Like that was weird for me, as I think it would be for anyone.
Yeah.
So this one turn, you know, normal turn, again, I was complimented on my turning ability.
You look good, man.
I don't really know what happens, but like I kind of just don't turn. Like I'm doing all the things to turn that I've learned in my massive 30-minute experience, and the turn ain't happening, and I just kind of careem off like one of those big sort of sidewalk things into some grass and kind of just like stumble over. Little embarrassing, but not a big deal. Like get back on, just try to get on quickly because I'm not trying to, you know, someone shows up and be like, are you okay? And it's just like, that's just embarrassing, bro, all of it. And I'm like,
yeah, you are not in peak moped driving state after the first stumble.
Well, I stumble and I don't notice this really until I'm going up a hill, but the throttle is really not giving me much.
Yeah.
Like, and it's the handle that I mentioned is now probably an inch away from where its original starting point was. And I think what happened, like the harder I'm trying to yank it to just get it, give it juice, the more it is sliding off the bar.
Yeah.
So managing again, kind of figuring out what I'm, when the stop for me is going to, is sure as fuck is not going to be 70 miles from now. trying to figure that out. And then we get to another turn where it's a light. So there's, this is like a T in a road.
Yeah.
Probably 30 cars in various directions stopped, waiting to turn, whatever. You know, it's like a multi-lane, big intersection. We have the green light, but it's turning yellow. So I'm trying to bang through this quickly. And the same thing. And again, it's like stress is kind of overcoming the wondering about what's happening. It's like, I just got to keep going.
Yeah.
And through this turn, bro, I, same thing happens, but way worse. And it's at this T, there's like the railing, like the guardrail thing that two guys are just, I don't really know why, but like stopped and kind of like sitting on their bikes. And, you know, I'm trying to turn and same thing, like what's going on here? But it's all happening very quickly where you're not even processing, like, why can't I turn? So I'm trying. Then you start, you put your feet down to try to, you're jamming on the brakes, which also suck. Your feet go down and then you start to shake. Like the handles start to shake is from all the, but long story, I go straight into this fucking guy's bike.
Oh,
like at 15, 20 miles an hour. And bike, like the handlebars off. So like at this time I had no throttle. And I, Forrest tried to explain, there's like a power steering element that also comes. So not only are you trying to gas through a turn to keep your momentum going naturally.
Oh, 'cause you need the gas kind.
I'm, didn't feel good. I'm very thankful I had the helmet, but then you immediately get up like, okay, I'm okay. I don't think I broke anything. Obviously, the next thing you do is ask, like,
check homeboy.
And then just, you know me, I like apologize profusely. soon, like multiple people stop, like, you guys okay? You need me to call an ambulance? Like, just like, oh my, I want to be
dead
anywhere.
But here.
Anywhere. And it's like 90, beating hot sun.
It was fucking hot.
Just, why? Why did I choose spontaneity? And so then, like, he's kind of acting like one of the, not, he's acting more hurt than I think he is. Like, you know, that kind of guy of, like, like, doing a lot of that sort of thing. Like,
rotating the
rotating
arm
rotating and, like, and
it doesn't rotate like it did 5 minutes ago.
And his, there's like a big dent in his thing, but like again, there's not, no one has insurance for the, this is ride at your own risk. That wasn't it's just understood.
Yeah.
So I'm just telling him, like, dude, I'm wicked sorry about this. Like, what should I do?
Yeah.
Like, I'm happy to throw you $100 for this or whatever. Like, I don't know how much this shit costs, yada, yada. He's not mean, but just sort of weird.
Yeah.
He's just a weird. So I keep saying, like, what's your Venmo? Like, I could not have said it more.
Yeah.
And then eventually, so the chase van, quote unquote, which is like just this van that follows for people like me, I think, to pick you up.
Has like a first aid kit in it somewhere.
No, not at all, actually. Just a megaphone is there. So there's like people trying to help me. So I'm kind of like, I'm getting out of here for sure.
Yeah.
I am done with this bullshit. And he says, like, he'll keep riding. So it's like, okay, you know, are you sure you don't want to? And he just, there's not a no, but there's definitely not a yes to, like, my many, many, many offers for to do anything. So I get in the van and then, like, you know, I'm starting to hurt more too, but I'm not doing the rotating.
Maybe he wasn't lying.
Yeah, I'm not. Well, no, I mean, like, I definitely took the worst of this. And thank God I had a helmet for real. I'm all bloody as fuck. Like, I have my lip, my knee. Like, I'm bleeding a lot, but not like worrisome. Just like I look like a mess.
Scraped up, not like.
So I get in the van, like, okay, we get back to the thing and it's like, okay, cool. Figure it out. Go back to this garage where we started, where we met the guy originally for the 30-minute ride to that bike shop.
Mm-hmm.
And just kind of wait, because the Airbnb isn't even an option. So everyone's just laying on this shitty carpet.
That sounds like a blast.
Yeah, it was not a blast. So long story short, get this long bullshit of, with this guy being, you know, he's a weird guy, and that's what attracts a lot of these people are strange, and don't have like a lot of social skills. But I do have sympathy for that. I feel that way myself a lot of the times.
Yeah.
So I really do have sympathy for this, but this guy's kind of painted me as like really an evil guy. Anyways, it ends fucking Monday. He's texting me, and it's one of those things where it's like, he says, so you're not going to pay for damages in a text that, you know, and I was like, what?
Yeah.
Like, we've texted many times before this. And each time I was like, what's your Venmo? You fucking responded with something else.
Yeah.
So I was just like, okay, dude, best of luck. And then that was it. But then he hits me up the following day.
Yeah.
24 hours later. So then we get into it, give him the Venmo and say, just so you know, this number's blocked. And I do, and I'm done with it. But would
Venmo
rather, $200 for a ride at your own risk. I had zero responsibility to do that everyone I talked to. It was literally just, I didn't want it to come back and force friends and be like an ongoing bullshit.
Yeah,
so
of course.
Like, okay.
You can't stain Forrest in the moped community.
Well, I can't stain more Robert, his buddy. Forrest is also on the lam with me up here. So anyway, dude, fuck mopeds. Fuck them, dude. I hate it. I hated everything about it. Like, this thriftiness that drives the whole hobby.
Yeah.
Buy a motorbike, you fucking morons. Buy a fucking motorcycle, you fucking idiots. That's all I felt the whole time. Like, so this is just a really shitty motorcycle that breaks down all the time.
Yeah.
That's what you guys like. Okay. That goes like, at best, even the best ones go like half the speed maybe of like a shitty motorcycle.
35, 40 or more than that?
Some of the like tricked out ones could go like 45, 50, there's no speedometer, so I literally couldn't even tell you. And already I'm starting to feel like I don't want to be talking about it anymore. So thank you, and not thank you, because mopeds should all burn.
All right, couple things. For starters, it's funny you say the thrifty element. I've never thought about that as related to it, but I, as one could imagine, have like a natural wonder for mopeds.
You should try a rally in New Haven.
I've done this thing my whole life. Like, I've tried to break this habit the last couple of years. A lot of it related to you and other things. But, like, I'll go to Martin's and buy, like, tons of cheap shoes, barely ever wear them, and get them wicked dirty because they cost nothing. You don't
take care of them. It's the American way.
Yeah, but all this, and I'm trying to, a thing that my dad was very good at.
To say.
Spend the money on the thing, but and then take really, really, really good care of it.
I'm good on half that.
But and I'm trying to, I see the value in that and want to adopt that kind of as a life thing. So I've never thought about that with the mopeds because they are cheaper. And I see myself doing it now with boats. I've got this thing where I kind of want a boat.
The one thing everyone tells you, don't buy one.
But that's what, so I want to buy, I've got this old, like.
I'm a contrarian, see? I do against the common understanding.
But I want to buy like an old $2,500 boat. It's a more, I want to get adventures.
Yeah, you got time.
With my dog. Uh-huh. And like get him out in the, and like go.
Aisha can fuck off.
Find these shores. But go find these like remote shores where he can run around. I can chill. It's my, the adventure thing is like my favorite thing. Whatever.
That was what I was sold on too. Just remember.
The adventure of a moped. But so I say like I've always liked them. Obviously we joke about scooters. Fucking obsessed when that was a wave, and they're not that far apart. But anyways, the point being, one of my core memories ever was renting mopeds in Martha's Vineyard and cruising around for a few hours.
Yeah, I bet it was a brand fucking new one. That's the difference,
there
dude.
There was no tinkering with that thing.
That is the difference. Like, riding it was fun.
Yeah.
But, like, the understanding, like, this could get fucked at any, is, like, any not, moment. It's just, like, that shouldn't, yeah. That shouldn't be a vehicle. Yeah. That's not what a vehicle should be.
I get that completely. But the bigger, more important thing to me was we were in the brewery and had that conversation, and the way you teed it up at the beginning was exactly how I experienced it, was kind of like, you know.
You were pumped for me.
Yeah. But you were kind of like, you know, fucking my buddy asked me to go to this moped rally, and my initial instinct was like, no, I can't, dude. I can't, busy work, that responsibilities, da da da. And you kind of like said to yourself, like, well, why the fuck can't I go? You know what I mean? And that's something that I've been trying to settle in. I think we both have
I think all adults, gets harder and harder the older you
and
get.
And that's what you say about even Forrest, like seeing my friend that he's got a kid now. And yep. It only gets harder. There only become more responsibilities. And finding that balance of mode where you are doing things for yourself and fun and getting a $1,500 boat to go on adventures with your dog is important. You know what I mean? But so I'm pissed that you had a bad experience on the other side of it.
I'm planning everything now, dude. There is going to be nothing left a chance in my life.
Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah. And just one last in Forrest's defense, like, he had been down there for like these very casual kind of like neighborhood cruises, mm-hmm. like casual as. And that was his experience, and that's what he was kind of thinking we were going in. He would never, ever, ever have brought me to what we, because he wasn't too far behind me. Again, bike broke.
Yeah.
Gets the ride back. And yeah, so anyway, man, fuck mopeds. But I love you, Forrest.
Fuck mopeds, but keep on going to do the spontaneous thing on a weekend when the
I need some positive
provides.
Reinforcement, yeah. Dude.
We can't let the negative feedback
I know.
That wave.
I know.
Gotta find a better one next time.
Yep, just planning.
I'll see what
planning
do.
And certainty and nothing left a chance. It's really all you need.
I'm gonna talk to Randy Carver. We're gonna do wrestling on the patio in Milo. Throw you the invite to come up. Maybe we can get some positive reinforcement.
Throw me the invite.
What's your place?
I'd be paying Randy Carver.
That's true. I'm trying to think of something that would be fun.
It's all good.
Fun and spontaneous.
It's all good. I'm good on spontaneous. How about this November when we start filming the cool ship again? That's the spontaneity that I'm looking for.
That is the definition of. But incredible.
Yeah, enough about that shit, dude. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. It's funny you say that. I was peeking through, but just in terms of Connecticut, I was peeking through like our podcast data this morning. And
New Haven's just popping.
New Haven's up there. Connecticut has, obviously, there's proximity, right? So what would you think would
hopefully be? None of them fucking own a moped. No,
and anybody listening that does own a moped, we love you.
One of us loves you.
But you would expect Portland to be first, has been for the longest time. Boston lives at the top of that list all the time. We've joked about Lake Stevens, Washington, as being this funny anomaly.
A server farm.
Still up there. I think she's number 11 right now. Big city. There was one other. Columbus, Ohio always has a weird turnout of listeners. Well, lo and behold, pouring through some of that stuff, the last 10 episodes, the number one listening city, not Portland, not Boston, not New Haven, or the stuff around us that usually lives at the top, it's Austin, Texas.
I bet there's a server farm.
It's Austin, Texas.
I really bet there's a server farm.
I bet that Joe Rogan or Lex Friedman, it's one of these thought leaders that has recently moved to Austin.
Maybe Tom Segura.
From California. You know? Yeah, one of these California transplants that's big in the podcast world, I think is listening, and I think is telling some people.
Or even just one of the, like, the D-list comedians that just kind of followed Rogan.
Oh, Rogan's going.
And if he's, whatever, yeah. If he's giving us listens,
we'll take.
Even if it is a server farm, we will take the listens.
We will take the listens. But all jokes aside, what makes that so interesting is that we've never had a Texas brewery on. We haven't been well represented in that region, right?
I've been planning on them succeeding and just being their own country. So I was operating under that mindset. Yeah.
And we haven't gone, we've gone international once or twice. But the point being, for people that are listening from that region, would love to get some recommendations on breweries out there.
Live Oak, just a King Live Oak.
That are interesting, any plugs to them, any contacts, primarily emails.
Primarily contacts.
Yeah.
Like, we can read the internet, but primarily, like, direct contacts is what's the best for us.
Exactly.
And something, we'll get it to happen the most likely.
Exactly. An email address, a phone number, somebody, if they happen to be familiar, you know that they like to do podcasts in general or are familiar with ours, even better. But graining in at BisselBrothers.com or DM the Instagram, send us Rex. We would love to have a Texas brewery on the podcast over the next month or two.
Yeah,
apparently people out there are listening.
Get ourselves a Lone Star date, baby.
Lone Star date. And we just crossed over 200 reviews on Apple Podcasts. So thank you to everybody for reviewing.
You're ready for me to rap?
You know we ain't afraid to ask. And I just wanted to... Obviously, we talk about some macro things in this.
You use the word a lot.
I use it a lot. It's a way to hedge how lack of detail-oriented I am, so I use the word macro all the time. But I do. I find that shit interesting.
Let's zoom out and look at it from the macro.
Can you open up the aperture for me? all jokes aside, we had an email. Didn't do full grain bag this week because I wanted to talk about something at the end and you had quite the moped adventure. So just wanted to answer one email, keep the responsiveness to the engagement and back and forth going. But it kind of touches on this thing we haven't talked about. We'll just unpack it for a minute and then roll into my side of the story. But email coming in, I've recently heard that the cost of liquid yeast has gone up dramatically, and there's always rumors of can shortages and increased costs of aluminum. This, on top of inflation and the cost of transport goods, has many concerned that craft breweries will have a hard time surviving. What are your thoughts on these types of issues? Should consumers be anxious that prices will increase exponentially? Would this drive fringe customers away from craft beer? Would Bissell be forced to make slushy beers or other trendy beers? ? Kind of, it's been on my mind a lot over the last few months of kind of like, just in a basic sense, I do think we have kind of rollover into recession. You have the war in Ukraine where it's called the breadbasket. It's where all this grain comes from. And just this kind of idea that if there is a real food shortage in the world and if there's way less discretionary income for people, I got to think that the first thing to go are $20 four packs of beer and stuff like that. You know what I mean? It's a vulnerable place to be.
Or maybe the 8 pairs of shoes you bought at Marvin's.
If you just zoom way out, it in theory could be a very vulnerable place for spending to get cut. Like totally. When they say for businesses, the first thing to go is advertising when you enter a recession. In that kind of theory, for a consumer, it's a luxury food product, mm-hmm. I guess is what I would say. What are your thoughts
Nothing
about
caviar?
What are your thoughts about the question?
Definitely a valid question. Mm-hmm. But especially for we're much bigger than we were, but still in the context, like we'll never be even remotely close to like the top 50 Brewers Association. Like, you know, I don't know. We might be in the top like 250 of that, maybe mm-hmm. the top 500. But
what metric is that?
Barrels
sales
a year.
Revenue
barrels
or
a year.
Yeah.
Yep. For craft brewers. So like, you know, near the top now would be like probably Dogfish, Sam Adams, Sierra. Are probably Oscar Blues, like the Canarchy, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
All these conglomeration type things because
totally.
It's just scale. Like I'm so thankful we're here now where we are a bigger company because it's just economies of scale where it gets easier to face something like this when across the board you have more ways to be more efficient.
Mm-hmm.
So we're very aware, like, yeah, economic uncertainty for sure that we're entering. But like our plan is just like let's tighten the belt where we can mm-hmm. without compromising what we've set out to do and make like good lives for these people. It's not about like tightening
yeah.
people out of the belt. But
yeah,
it's just
yeah.
about like, okay, let's stop spending. Let's like keep a harder grasp on spending. Let's try to. Maybe let's say with hops, like exclusively by the pallet now
mm-hmm.
or stuff like that. Just bigger orders, just little efficiencies there really add up over time.
Totally.
Also, we haven't been doing really, we'll have to go to hop selection because they stopped doing the remote thing. But other than that, we're not taking trips and stuff. That used to be a part of our budget every year.
Yeah, yeah.
So little things like that. So yeah, it's worrying, but it's not. No, we won't like, I think the quickest way to the grave is to switch to slushy shit now.
Yeah.
That's the fastest way to actually feel the recession.
I think.
Because that's not what we do. That's not what we're known for. Like, it just would, in every way you could, it would be artificial. Like,
yeah.
It would be synthetic. It would be, and I think, just a poor response. Go ahead.
Can you unpack there for a brief second? And I know it's hard for you because I'm going to tee this up for you. And it's hard to answer from where you sit because it's about you and decision making and stuff like that. But from where I sit, you can look at crypto that just happened. You can look at the dot-com bubble. You can look at any of this and everything's cyclical and it's
yep.
boom bust. And when you get into boom, everybody winning.
It's always boom, right?
Everybody winning, right?
Yeah.
It's going to boom and it's going to continue to boom. And it's that old Warren Buffett saying of like, the great one, when the tide goes out, you get to see who was swimming naked sort of thing.
I prefer the Oscar Wilde quote, which is when there's blood on the streets, buy real estate.
There it is. I thought that was a quote from Inside Man.
It's definitely
featuring
not
Denzel.
Oscar Wilde.
Yeah, Inside Man, Denzel Washington, when there's blood in the streets, buy land. But in all seriousness, as it relates to that, as you sit now and look back at, because right, from where I sit in the company, you have always been the kind of anchor of growth. There's been kind of push for growth on some sides. You're always the more cautious about growing and thoughtful growth and things like that.
Looking
and I do
pretty
think,
smart right now.
Well, that's and then when you hit this moment right now and what is probably going to unfold over the next 18 months. You do see pretty quickly, and I'm not going to name too much, but like a Modern Times or some brew that even pre getting to the real bad stuff, when you grow wide and you can kind of either grow fat or you can grow lean. When you grow real wide and you have a ton of input costs, a tiny turnover, I think it impacts people more than they realize.
Yeah.
A 30% drop in sales when your input costs keep going up and up and up, that's hard to unwind and turn around. How do you feel right now? Because I do think you have a sense of confidence. Pete does. I feel it. It's tangible of not being incredibly worried in answer to this question. But I think a lot of that comes from the cautionary way that this business has been run, specifically from a growth perspective, where you do have levers to pull to tighten that belt and to be okay before you have to get to the real hard medicine that you have to take in these situations.
Hemlock.
Which is cutting staff and cutting locations. Like cutting the input costs that start the downward spiral the other way. Travel isn't going to kill you as a company. It doesn't show weakness. It doesn't reverse the growth. Cutting 10 employees off, that changes everything within a company immediately. So how do you feel about that from where you sit right now?
I think the best example is this place,
mm-hmm.
where many other breweries, and I'm not at all saying we have no idea because everyone's situation's different and yada yada. But like where other breweries in our shoes, okay, you were in Portland, might have opened an arm in Boston, or mm-hmm. might have opened an arm in Portsmouth, or might have opened mm-hmm. an arm in Manchester, a population center. yeah, we definitely didn't do that. But you know, you see 100%. That like other half, let's say, okay, you go Rochester, then you go DC. And I'm not saying, I have no idea what how their business model. I literally no clue.
I was wearing another half shirt this morning.
Yeah, no,
I like
that brewery a lot.
Covered in broccoli.
But the point is, like, we went the opposite direction and went to a place where we could buy the building for like what a year's rent would have been in somewhere mm-hmm. like Boston, probably. Mm-hmm. And you deal with a whole lot of other challenges, but the risk, the inherent risk is so much lower by being up here. In addition to the fact we have a story like a very real story to tell and all these other things. But I think Milo is a great example of like, no, we proceeded with caution. It fucking boils down to that. Proceed with caution.
Totally. Not to interrupt, but to tie into that, and repurposed old tanks and an old brew house.
Right.
Because I got to think.
We barely bought any new equipment.
Exactly. And that's what I'm trying to get into the weeds on a little bit is when these things do happen, from your standpoint as a business owner, the two biggest input costs that you could have, or let's go three. Tell me if I'm asking. This is a question. Would be debt on the equipment, because equipment in this industry is capitally intensive and huge, would be leases on facilities if you're a place that has opened 5, 6, 7 locations for sure. But even 3 or 4, if you choose.
You're paying in perpetuity.
Yeah. If you choose to be Boston, those leases can be $100,000.
Forever.
On the place forever.
Every month forever.
And then number three would obviously be your labor and your employees. And that one is the most delicate. Because once you start to pull on that lever, the culture, the morale of everybody else, if you start tweaking that lever, is real hard to play with. And it only tends, from what I can see, to go one direction unless you are an incredible leader and can really convince people that, yes, I just cut your best friend on the line, but we're going to get through this and I'm going to get you to the growth place again where we can all be happy. And it's almost impossible. Are those kind of the three big input costs that you have control over? Are those the three biggest, I guess is what I'm saying?
Yeah, for sure.
Because when I look at this, to what you said, you two of those massive costs.
It's mostly two. It's mostly leasing and like for now, we don't have a lot of debt on equipment.
Yeah.
Right now, I don't think we have any. You'd have to ask Jared, but I really don't think we have any. Or it's just sort of like we're waiting for the net 90 or whatever the fuck, like kitchen stuff here, maybe something like that. But so it's really the other two things are by far our biggest cost.
And I know that you're, to bring it back to the question, I know that you are not this way. And this is, I think you're, conviction in your viewpoint of beer or your belief of how to approach it, I think is very strong. And that's why we get somebody who would even tee up a question. Would you ever make the slushy beer? Because it's well known that how you kind of view beer and want to make it. But I get the sense that when you do have those big looming debts, that if you have a huge terms on your equipment,
can't imagine
huge terms on leases and stuff like that, then the pressure to go brew a style that you know that right now in a moment is a winner, or something, that the pressure to not to change your ethos or not stick to your core values only increases. You know what I mean? I would have to think that.
I felt like that pressure was more felt a few years ago, where now I feel like the general sensibilities of beer market in general have turned a little bit more towards our favor, like on the whole, and a little away from the slushies, a little, not even away from seltzer, but just that's kind of
seltzer's settled big time.
It's becoming its own thing fully, you know, where, yeah, I feel less of those pressures than ever, I think.
Incredible.
For whatever that's worth. That's one random dude's perspective, though.
No,
from me.
But again, it's kind of back to, I think, when you have these consolidation moments and you have these, when the tide goes out, a lot of that stuff goes with it. And the thing that, for me, the thing that was really able to get me excited about beer, I've said, like, when it comes to, like, my natural inclination would have been to be more towards, like, cocktails and margaritas, like, as no joke, that's kind of, it even maps to who I am.
I've been to Applebee's with you, I know.
But what the thing that was able to give me an on-ramp to get really, really excited about beer was when you talked about, like, this thing has been around forever. It has made it, beer has seen more boom and bust cycles than fucking the internet, than any of these things have.
People like beer so much, they were making it by putting an old shitty loaf of bread in water in the sun, dude.
Yeah, that's it. And it's that thing, that these trends will come and things will happen, but what is at the essence of beer is simplicity. And and when you have these boom and bust cycles, the bust washes a lot of that away, and it brings it back to the stuff that has been time proven for thousands of years. And that's not to say new trends don't come and live forever, but by math,
we pay our bills with one of those trends.
Yeah, exactly. But 15 of them come, and one or two of them stay, and it starts its own legacy of being a new thing that gets time tested over time. But it is it's a great question. It's a fascinating place to sit, and
I really hope I don't sound overly like smug or whatever, like, about it, you know. But I also don't feel like there's a ton of like benefit in feeling super worried about the future. Like, mm-hmm. you got to know that you can't control the future and be ready and be ready to adapt.
Yeah.
But there's, to just live in fear is not a good way to operate.
Yeah.
And I think that could be easier than ever to slip into that.
Totally. And to close it on my side, like, I know we're too white guys sitting here on a microphone with tons of, I'm not going to use the word privilege, but lucky to sit in this position and be able to opine on these things. And as much as it can be ridiculous to sit here and say these, I do feel incredibly secure in my job and my position because of these decisions that y'all have made to put us here.
But he's throwing a y'all in.
But to the flip side of that is, so even though we're talking this way and saying these things, the fact that recession could come hit hard, and no matter how careful you've been with growth, no matter how much you've stuck to an ethos that matters with people and keeps them on your side for a long time while trends come and go, the fact of the matter is it could be very bad, and no matter how good you do it, that $15 four-pack of substance isn't in people's budget in 18 months, 2 years. Not sitting here saying that even the storm's going to be that big or we're going to weather it, but none of this is a given that, like,
of course,
we're fucking fine, baby, because we've made these decisions. We could get fucking crushed.
Absolutely.
Absolutely crushed.
Yep.
And anybody could. And
in any industry.
In anything,
you know,
exactly.
And that understanding, that's first. You got to understand, like, this isn't a given.
Yeah.
Like, at any day, like, this isn't a given.
Yeah.
The place could burn down.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know but that could happen.
Yeah. And for the insurance money.
And insurance would make it so your life isn't a financial ruin, maybe, but like no one else has a job.
Yeah.
Like, period.
Yeah.
But, so yeah, nothing is certain at all, but I don't think living in that is the way to move forward.
And I'd be lying if I said I didn't have a strange confidence to be part of what I'm a part of because of the decisions that have been made till now. Because there's not two locations in Boston and this and that. It's been, you could have made a lot more money before this if you wanted to, but it seems sustainable and strong. And I'll just leave it there. And I feel lucky to be a part of it right now. Knock on wood before I jinx this whole fucking thing.
I'll knock on cardboard because I don't believe in superstitions.
Well, I appreciate you opening up about that. It's a very interesting perspective to have, and I appreciate it.
Dude, we got to get out of here, man.
Got to keep the business alive.
Got to keep the business alive for tomorrow.
Oh, and shout out, I'm trying to get him on the podcast, but we have the people from Bigelow Fields across the street right now shooting a documentary with Chef Joe, and they just had a podcast where they talked about how the Farmland Trust was what enabled them to come. They moved to Maine from Washington, D.C., started a bison farm. We get our bison from them. And they just had a podcast talking about it. Going to go over there, get to know them.
Are you saying we're responsible?
And going to try to get them on the podcast to talk bison farming. Like I said, we like to keep a real tight circle around here. But
nepotism, get at me.
But before we do that, we got to do a three-bay, and I think I got a pretty good one.
All right.
We talked about the moped fiasco, and we talked about kind of macro heading into a recession and the tough business decisions that need to be made when you're not in a boom cycle. So we are going to take three modes of transportation, and I won't do moped on you, I promise. Three modes of transportation, and we are going to pair them up with three beers that are no longer brewed at Bissell Brothers, beers that have been cut from the portfolio, if you will, and tough decisions had to be made around them. So we are going to do my favorite, Scooter. We're going to do like true Scooter, stand on a platform with a handlebar coming up. So Bird Scooter, Lime Scooter, like that. We're going to do that. We're going to do Spaceship. We're going to do Submarine. We're going to touch a little bit of everything.
Besides the most normal mode of transportation, which is a car.
I ain't doing that. Okay, we're going land, air, water. Submarine, scooter, spaceship.
In the extremes of land and water.
We're not doing plane, car, boat. No fucking way, baby. And we are pairing that with three beers that no longer get brewed at Bissell Brothers. And I'll give you a little hint. The last part of that email that I did not include in the question asked whatever happened to Lucid. Just throwing that out there. Do with that what you will.
It's tough because a lot of the beers, like, there isn't, like, a ceremony of, like, we're done. No. You know what I mean?
Everybody get together.
Yeah.
Announcement. You're not going to believe this. Bucolia's done.
Yeah. So, I mean, and that just kind of got revamped and sort of repackaged. So I'll just use beers that probably will come back at some point. Or some of these might come back at some point. We just haven't brewed them in a while.
Yeah,
so Lucent, I can... Definitely is. Let's go Lucent. So I'll start with Bucolia because that is not coming back. That is a submarine. That is deep underwater. That's dead and gone. The barometric pressure is promptly dropped or promptly rising, I guess, is what you'd be fighting in the sea.
It ain't even got a periscope.
And that submarine is caved in on itself a long time. There's wreckage, you know, 30,000 leagues under if you want to go peep it. With a working submarine. Scooter. Let's go losing for Scooter because I don't hate scooters.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely don't hate Lucent, but didn't seem to be a viable. It's hard to fit in. Like we talk about it all the time, but like if I could go back and have gotten like 3 20 barrel lagering tanks instead of the 240 or some version of combination, things would be a lot different for what we, but if you are committing to lagering something in one of these at half, you're committing this tank for like 4 weeks at half full. And that's hence Precept as a printed can now. We've put a, our energy, or most of our energy's been put into like perfecting that beer and and every level, which I think we're doing a fantastic job of, if I do say.
Yeah.
So Lucent, we'll go with Scooters. It kind of scooted out of the periphery.
Well, it's literally.
It might scoot back. You might bring the scooter back, but right now it's gone. It's light. It's Lucent. It's ghost.
It couldn't be more perfect. Fun, lovable, not viable. Scooters. Lucent. Can I ask you a quick question though while you were there? Because that's an awesome point and insight. When you talk about going back for the 220s, for 320s instead of 240s, from like a cost basis and setup basis, would that have been a very easy thing to do? And would the cost have been about the same in terms of having the 240s instead?
It's hard. It was a long time ago for one, and it was a company we've only used for that. They're like, and I honestly think they might have only done a minimum of 30 barrels. There's literally a big manufacturer.
Gotcha.
So I'm not even, but now lagering tanks are not as like rare and esoteric so that you could get them at other places.
Gotcha.
At that time, it was literally like, that was the only place I could find in America that regularly made them.
So that probably, that did dictate that decision a lot of like, absolutely. 240s must have made a ton of sense at the moment.
Yeah, and it wasn't like dumb. And it still isn't dumb, just that flexibility would be very nice to have.
Totally. Interesting. Brings us to number three.
Yeah. Spaceships don't come equipped with rear view mirrors. They dip. They don't come equipped with rear view mirrors. That's very true. So let's go.
I like the way that you're approaching this.
Let's go with the first edition of Seed.
Because
that, if they're, I don't really know how the rear view mirror comes into play, but looking in our rear, we do have one now, looking back, it's funny because if like things took a little bit of a different trajectory, the first few Seeds were kettle sour.
Yeah.
They were real fruit. Yeah. Like they were always main fruit, but the natural evolution of that is a slushy.
Yeah.
Like I think 100%. If you take that to the nth, you take that to space.
Take that to space in your
spaceship. So I'm going to say canned Seed.
Great answer.
A spaceship.
I thought you were going to say Diavoletto because NASA might, it's so low ABV that NASA might even let the astronauts
let
drink that on the spaceship.
Powdered Diavoletto.
The only thing you're allowed to have is Diavoletto on that
in
spaceship.
Powder form.
Great episode, man. Really enjoyed
stuff.
Running through all that stuff. Send us your guest requests. We've got some booking up to do. We've got to get some stuff together. Anybody knows a good guest, send them our way. We need the contact info, and we will contact them.
Yes.
Goodbye. I'm in the mood to be slow and careful.